What are we doing, Jeff?
Atari Now.
It's Atari Now. It's about I don't know, what is it, 9:19 at night?
9:19 at night on the 29th?
I think
of
it's
December?
The 29th.
So it really
of
is
December.
A December Atari Now.
Yeah, December, and this is going to be a little different. I think Atari Now is starting to morph a little bit back into what the Overscan was, but I think the Overscan was not a good name because it's just too esoteric.
It's Atari Now.
So Atari Now makes more sense, and we're going to talk about some of the news items and talk about some of the homebrew, and also have a few predictions for 2026.
Into the vertical line, generation Atari.
And the point of Atari Now is to cover all of the Atari machines for this month. And our other podcast that we may or may not do when we have time covers very specific things about those systems.
Right.
And we may also have a feature in these Atari Nows too. You never know.
Yeah, we don't know. I had an idea for a feature, but now it turned into almost a full-length thing that I'm probably going to release tomorrow. So it's about the Evercade
good.
Alpha. Yeah, I got an Evercade Alpha video with some gameplay and a few little details about the Evercade Alpha that will go up probably tomorrow, which is the 30th. And then this one will probably go up, I think, January 3rd, because that will – or 4th, the Sunday, January 4th.
All right, this one will go January 4th, so we should actually call this January.
No, but it's December Atari Now for in January.
Okay. Yeah. We're just going to call this is the January. This is Atari Now. And then
we did one early December, but it was for November.
No, we did not. We did not. The last one we did was for November.
For November, but in December.
No.
I'm looking at my phone right now.
I don't think we've done one. I think you did a podcast and I did a separate podcast.
Do we not do one about... We didn't do one about November?
No.
Okay. We did on November 9th. Oh, yeah. November 9th, we did Atari Now for November, but it was for October.
Yeah.
Wait. October 5th. It's October 2025. Oh, okay. So literally we missed November is what you're trying to tell me. We never did.
Right, everything we have in here is for both November and December. So let's just, instead of talking about...
This is the end of the year. Atari Now for the end of the year. It's January 2026.
This is January 2026. Atari Now. Yeah.
Atari Now. Okay, it's covering whatever we feel like we want to cover.
Exactly.
Which we're going to do. Okay. So... The first thing I wanted to talk about, Jeff, was the big news that happened a few weeks ago was that Zero Page Homebrew shut down.
They did shut down.
Some of our favorites, Zero Page Homebrew shut down. And I was very upset about this. And they went online and they said, made an announcement that they were going to shut down and there wasn't going to be the Homebrew Awards this year. And then they went radio silent and didn't talk about the reason. And it just let people speculate. So at the time, I speculated on why they might have shut down.
Let's do the caveat first before you say it. Caveat is they're coming back. Okay, right. I say the speculation's great because things have to change in this online feedback loop that people are in when they're doing stuff and getting negative feedback. The caveat is they're coming back, but let's speculate as why they left in the first place.
Like long story short, they are coming back, and that was the other side of this news. But we speculated earlier this month. We speculated on the reasons why they may have shut down, and the top seven reasons were this job stinks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Focusing on Atari is hard. Comments on the internet can be brutal. It takes all your time and there's very little reward.
Yes.
They avoided commercial ports. That was something that I saw some people on Facebook complain about. And then they came back. I also bought you a shirt for Christmas. I bought you a Zero Page Homebrew
you did.
Shirt.
I did. I'm going to wear
that
it for
I
the
thought
next one.
I thought would be a great idea to wear on this podcast when we were going to talk about the fact that they were going away. But now we'll just wear it next time.
Are you not? Why are you wearing yours now? No,
I'm not. Are you wearing yours?
Because it's right here.
Yeah, mine
is. I could put it on.
I don't know where mine is, to be honest. It's okay. In the closet
next time,
somewhere.
Next
but
time.
Yeah, next time. So great news. Zero Page Homebrew is coming back. I really, really like Zero Page Homebrew. They've reviewed my games multiple times, and they always have nice things to say. So
and they
I really
liked
them.
The worst game.
Yeah, they did like the worst game, which made it hard. But James wrote a couple fun little comments about it. And you know what? I super appreciate any time he can give to it. Right. And, you know, obviously our homebrew things are just weird experiments and fun little things and not really serious. So it's fun to be part of that community. And at the same time, we are going to be part of the Homebrew Awards this year, and we're going to vote on Atari 7800 and Atari ST Homebrew. So perfect. That's going to be part of our – I think that starts in January. So anyway, great news that they're back.
Yes.
It was really sad when they went. I felt like honestly, I felt this weird sense of loss that they
I know.
Were going
it
away.
Was like it there was an was empty really – like there was a break in the force.
Yes.
So let me ask you a question.
The next thing – Oh,
let me ask you a question, though, about this. The commercial ports thing, what is that controversy? Like, it's specifically...
I don't watch all of their shows all the time, but I believe they concentrate on original games
right.
and not necessarily commercial ports that people do, unlicensed commercial ports of games that people make. That's what I believe. I may be wrong about that.
Or maybe they weren't doing Atari's ports.
Well, yeah, and I think that there's, you know, there is some question about, oh, they're tied with Atari Age, which is kind of ridiculous because it's such a small community anyway. Like, it doesn't – how could you not be
– Yeah, how could you not talk to Albert about games?
Yeah, and at the same time, I saw other comments on Facebook from some people that were like, oh, they don't – they only concentrate on games that are released on Atari Age. And I'm thinking, yeah, but who has the time to go search down everything? Like, put a message on Atari Age about your game.
Yeah.
Right? Like, then they'll find it. Maybe
contact
some people can't do
James,
that.
James, offer to do an interview and show your games. That's how it will work.
Yeah, or something. But, right. So, anyway, I think that they offer a great service. It's a thankless service.
It's a thankless service.
Yeah. I said people thank them for it, but it's kind of thankless. And, I'm glad it's back. So... next one I want to talk about was Arcade 1-Up, which I have a couple Arcade 1... Actually, I have three Arcade 1-Up things
you know,
I have.
I
have the Atari Centipede one. I have the pinball, Williams pinball, and I have... now I have the Pac-Man sort of barcade thing. I love them all, and I love the idea of Arcade 1-Up, even if I was very, very... sad they could never get Bosconian on any of their Namco machines. But anyway, they were supposedly having troubles this month, and it ended up a couple weeks ago that there is some word that Basic Fun bought them, which is a toy company that was started by, or at least populated by some toy executives that I once was aware of. And they do a lot of interesting stuff, and they had their own line of I think 3/4 scale arcade games, and they have a Star Wars one out now that's not too bad. And I guess they bought the assets of Arcade 1-Up, maybe the branding, maybe the games. I believe also that one of the guys that was very high up in Arcade 1-Up went over to Basic Fun earlier this year, so that may have something to do.
I like it. I mean, I like that they were purchased by someone, not just going away.
I'm glad they're not going away. I think the whole concept of these arcade machines is really interesting. I think it needs to change a bit. I will say this. I love having, I call them machines. They're really not machines. They're like, it's like a press board box with the monitor inside, but it's an arcade, right? I guess the British call them arcades. Let's just call it an arcade. I love the concept of them because I love the idea that there are limited amount of games. And I know people are like, what? I want to play all my ROMs. Yes, they have other ways to do that. But there's something about having the games in a very arcade-like form of games I haven't really concentrated on that I can go play. So I got really into Millipede when I got the Centipede one. And then I got really into Tempest, and I was able to play them, and the controls feel really, really natural and get really into those games. And with the Namco one, I was able to get really, really, really into Dig Dug, which is one of my favorite arcade games. So I think there's something to, and I really would love to have a Star Wars one. A Star Wars one would be amazing. But I just love the idea of there being a few games, but very curated and very well done, and allow you to play them to the utmost. It's just something about having, you know, 100,000 games in front of you that aren't curated, and most of them have a really hard time getting you getting to run and stuff. I'd rather just have some games that work really well. Right. And that leads me to the Evercade Alpha, which is amazing and is that in spades. But I'll probably just talk about it in my video tomorrow.
Okay, your video. So we're okay. Well, you will have talked about it then.
Yeah. So another thing that that happened in November was Rebecca Heineman passed away.
How sad.
So Rebecca Heineman, who won the first Space Invaders competition, the first, probably one of the first, if not the first, but probably the first. You never want to say the first, just like they will not do on They Create Worlds. They say we never name the first because there's always someone always finds something that came before it. But probably one of the first e-gaming competitions, right? Esports competitions, Rebecca Heineman won.
Was it the 2600 version? Or is it
yes.
a commission?
It was a 2600 version, I believe. And then she also, I mean, worked at Interplay and worked on Bard's Tale, I believe, and Dragon, the sequels to Bard's Tale, bunch of role-playing games. And I think that that Rebecca Heineman just was and was still working on games to this day.
Right.
But her wife died last year, I think, which is incredibly sad. And it's just awful because one of my favorite people that when we had a nice community on Twitter a couple years ago, a few years ago, she was part of it, or at least part of the circle that I was in. You know, I don't know about her other circle, but and you too, and it's just tragic. So
yeah.
But anyway, Rebecca Heineman passed away, and
it's a huge loss, unfortunately.
Yeah. One other thing that I have listed here is the Pixie engine for Beatari Basic was I think launched in November. The Pixie engine is a kernel that you can choose in Beatari Basic. 50 extra variables, playfield and background color can be set per line, allowing vertical scrolling, more detailed playfields. Yeah, that's actually amazing. Horizontal scrolling, full 40 pixel play field width, improve flicker logic, only the overlapping portion of sprites will flicker when large sprites partially overlap, 60K of ROM space that you don't have to use bank switching with, graphics data can use all of the available ROM space, more available CPU cycles in the V-blank and overscan. Automatic horizontal, automatic horizontal masking for players 1 through 16. Automatic detection of color conversion for NTSC and PAL consoles, color cycling, paddle support, and Quatari support, which I don't really know what that is, but and it's supported by Stella and Gopher 2600. I looked at some of the games that people were making with this and some of the demos, and you could, for instance, create you can define a huge map in data and then like scroll around it in one of demos I was looking at. And it's like, it just seemingly you could do amazing stuff with it. And also there's a company that's selling the boards for you to flash your ROMs onto. So
does it require an extra Logic piece Studios. Of hardware or something like that?
Yeah, does no, it requires it just a different board. No, it requires a different board to go into the cartridge. So yeah, it's just a different like, it's almost like a NES cartridge mapper. It's a different mapper that writes to that has some, you know, allows you to has some extra hardware on the board that lets you do it. So a lot of people are going to are targeting it because it just gives a bigger canvas to make Atari 2600 games. I like it. I like that the fact that the games can run on original hardware. Hopefully they'll be able to run on the Plus consoles. Even, it says Stella supports it, so hopefully there'll be an update that allows them to run there. But that's pretty cool. So that was the big news that I had. I mean, there's the Intellivision Sprint went on sale in November. Vectrex Mini Kickstarter blew up.
That new Commodore 64 is just getting rave reviews, like things like that. There's a lot of stuff happening in December. And the thing about a new Commodore 64 like that is, you know, the hope is there's a new Atari 8-bit like that at some point.
Yes.
And so keeping the fingers crossed. But and that wasn't like an emulation machine. That was like, may have been emulation machine. But it was like it was a full real hardware Commodore 64. So the hope is that there's Atari STs and Atari 8-bits out there that this is going to happen for too. So fingers crossed. So I picked out for this show, unless people send me the homebrew they want to show, and I will cover it if you send it to me, I'm just going to pick out the ones that I think kick butt. So the first one is a new Atari ST version of the Atari 8-bit roguelite called Rogul. That is not yet available for download, but it looks like a great new rogue game, rogue-style game for the Atari ST and STE. There is, and I should be showing on the screen right now when I edit this, because I played it, a Castlevania VBXE game.
Really?
Using a PAL Altera and the VBXE, which is how I was able to get it to run. It looks like an Amiga game.
Oh, really?
And one thing I want to talk about the VBXE, I'm going to have a video out relatively soon which goes through all the VBXE games and tries to talk about what should be the Atari 8-bit next, which is like the Spectrum Next has a Spectrum Next with all kinds of new graphics modes and stuff that they're targeting. I think there should be the Atari 8-bit next, and VBXE should be the heart of it, along with a couple other things that I think should be in it. And I should have a video up relatively soon about that. That will be Atari 8-bit show number one.
Oh, I can't wait.
Also
for
on
that.
The ST front, I had Atari ST show number one, covering the strange 20 great PD games that were released and kind of given away free with Atari STs in the USA in 1989. Okay, back to the homebrew.
Oh, well,
Der Schranker 4.
Don't forget then, I also had at the beginning of this month was that that video about Greg Cooperberg. So they're our first sort of PC show number one.
Did you rename that PC show number one?
I didn't rename it PC show number one.
You need to rename that PC show number one.
So that was about Greg Cooperberg. I had an interview with him, one of the best DOS booter programmers of the original IBM XT.
His games were amazing.
Yeah, his games are freaking awesome. And he only made three games. But I feel like there's a lot more to mine in that era for the PC. So there'll be I may rename it PC number one, but for right now, the next one will be PC number one, and that will probably be about Executive Suite. So we will see.
That would be great. Yeah. Der Schranker, that's the winner of the ABIC winner. ABIC contest. I finally got to play it. It is a technically outstanding action platform game with great music and graphics that I'm terrible at. So there's finally a download, playable download of Street Fighter II for the Atari 8-bit. Not VBXE or anything like that. An incredible version of Street Fighter II for the Atari 8-bit. That'll be playing right now in the video.
I'm
And then I went to their site, vega.atari.pl, and for download are all the rest of their incredible games. Two of them, for example, Bubble Bobble and Bomb Jack, are just amazing also. So they have a whole bunch of other Atari 8-bit games they've made. I know I've heard about them over the last few years, but I'm going to have to do some sort of a 8-bit show extra about just their games, just to sort of show what they're doing. All right. 2600 and 7800 homebrew. So, Mattress yes. Monkeys is a brand new game for the 7800. I was able to watch a couple videos of it. It uses the Chameleon cart to provide a version for the 2600 and the 7800 on the same cartridge. So
interesting.
You plug it into a 2600, you get the 2600 version. If you plug it into a 7800, you get the 7800 version. If you plug it into a 2600 Plus, I have no idea what you get. we want to... There's a review of it at the link that I'm going to put in the show notes. It's not our review. And then Phil San posted about the Uno Kart Plus, which is a cart, SD card cart that will work in the 2600 and 700 Plus. So and I have a link here of where to buy it. So you can actually put it in and get multiple ROMs to play on your 2600 and 700 Plus. It just was a matter of time before someone made a multi-cart for those machines.
That's awesome.
And those were my picks for December. Those are my current picks.
I don't know if there's any other news. So we're just down to our own stuff, I guess. So let's start the first
thing. The 2026 predictions? Is that what you want to go to?
We go to our 2026 predictions, the first thing I wanted to talk about was Christmas 2025. How is Christmas 2025 for you, Jeff? I know finances are low.
Retro game wise, I got from the family. I got this little mini Atari 50 that like a little stand up little arcade, has 50 Atari 2600 games on it. I played a lot.
Was that the My Arcade one?
It's the Atari 50th, so I don't know if it's My Arcade or it's okay. Whatever. Yeah, I think it is My Arcade. And then it has 50 other games on it by other, you know, other unlicensed or licensed games on it. Pretty cool. I also got the Jeff Minter cartridge for the Evercade.
Oh, I have that too.
And
yes.
I'll be showing pictures of that while we talk about this.
So I play that one in my video about the Evercade Alpha.
So I got a copy of your game, The Worst Game, from you.
This one? Wait, hold on. I think it's behind me. Here's The Worst Game. I made 9 of these for friends. I have 2 left. So you got one, and a couple other friends got them. And The Worst Game is now on cartridge.
Just one second. Okay, so a couple other things I got. These were specifically, these are great, great Atari things. This is from you, so you know.
Oh, yeah.
I got the Atari Pac-Man double feature and the joystick.
And I have those as well. I actually bought them for myself, too.
I told you that I want a part of the 8-bit, Atari 8-bit show. I want to use Adventure Creator. The problem is I can't save it out. There's no way to save it in emulation, so you got me a copy of Adventure Creator.
That's right, but now you got
it. I need to get my disk drive working now.
Do you have the...
Yes, I can use an emulated disk drive for it.
Emulated disk drive, yeah. I think an emulated disk drive will work.
Yes.
SIO disk drive, right?
SIO, like SIO to SD. SIO to SD, so I can do that.
I think with SIO to SD, you could do it.
And then I got a copy of The Worst Game.
Yep. There,
Worst Game. You found some of our original games that we had for the Vectrex. Here's Armor Attack.
No, that's not original.
No, no, no. I'm saying you found, you got me copies of games we recently had for the Vectrex. Yes. Two of my favorite games of the Vectrex, Scramble. So
those were purchased on a Whatnot auction for less than $20 a piece, just so you know.
Well, I mean,
it was a Whatnot auction that almost no one who was a Vectrex fan was there, and I was able to pick them up very cheap. I picked up about 10 other Vectrex games for that price as well. It was crazy.
Four channel left video cards come next.
And
video
the one, the three, reason why I was, you five, got those. See, look at number five. Hold up number five. Number five, you can't, yeah, number five is Space War. And I was going to sell these on eBay, all the carts. And then for some reason, I had this pang of like, I really don't want to sell Space War. And then I realized I kind of didn't want to sell any of them. So I took all the box cards. I did end up selling the empty box and the instruction manual. A guy just wanted the instruction manual. I asked him if he would pay $15 extra, he could have everything that I had, which is a bunch of loose cards and stuff. And he took all of it. So got rid of that out of my garage.
Well, those but are
I
great,
kept
though.
The carts. So, yeah. And then I said, I got an Atari watch, which is awesome. So one of the new Atari watches, it plays four different games and has like a step counter and a bunch of other stuff. It's great just to have a watch. The best thing about it is the regular, when it just shows the time, it has like a classic sort of breakout image from the game Breakout with the time. It just looks really slick. I love it. I can't wait to be at work and just look at the time and say, hey, it's Breakout.
It's Asteroids O'Clock.
10:42. It's Asteroids O'Clock, exactly. So I got that. I got the Activision game for Evercade, which I play in the video. The Evercade Alpha controls are very good, and I was able to get my best score ever on River Raid.
Wow.
I was also got the LlamaSoft one, which has a weird problem in that I think they added Llamatron 2112 late in the development cycle because it's the last game listed in the instruction manual, even though it's like the 13th game on the list or something. Anyway, that one has a really, really bizarre control scheme by default, which has you shoot in the four different directions using the buttons, except the buttons are not laid out the way that the buttons would be laid out to shoot in four different directions. Hmm. They're laid out in a square. So really it's just it's f***ing confusing, but there's a way to set it so you fire in the direction that you're moving. It just is not apparent how to do it at all, but I finally got it to work. Llamatron 2020 was great on that.
The Evercade Alpha to me is the next advent of those machines.
Yeah, look, it's right here. Can you see mine back there? I've got it up there.
What size is it? Is it bar top or is it?
It's bar top. It's bar top size. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And the controls are full arcade size controls, but it's a bar top. Here I come back again. I really like it. I got a couple of the Toplan 1 and 2 as well for that. And I want to see what else. You gave me a box of all of my Atari ST games from back in the day, that all the discs and manuals that we had left and everything else. So I have that as well, which I'm really, really excited.
Also made the custom loader.
You made a custom loader so that I could load those games in and play them on my own. And then one last thing, I decided I wanted to play Stone Keep.
Yes.
And I sent you a copy of Stone Keep as well. So Stone Keep is a game from a PC game from 1995. It's kind of a dungeon crawl. It was programmed. A lot of it was programmed by a guy named Peter Oliphant, who passed away a couple years ago. I was semi friends with Peter Oliphant after he came and interviewed for a job at our work. And over the years I talked to him. Sad story. But when he had come in then, it was like 2001, he was just coming off the fact that the game industry had kind of rejected him after Stone Keep, because Stone Keep was not a success. It was a 2D, like kind of scaling game made released in the 3D, just when 3DFX cards were coming out in the 3D era. So people are like, oh, it's so old school and old style at the time. People like it. Playing it now, emulated, it's actually totally playable and really fun to play. More fun to play now than back then. And I can't explain why. Maybe because the machines now can actually run it at the speed it's supposed to be run, because it really couldn't be run correctly on a 46, you know, DX266 or whatever 46 DX100, whatever you're running back then. So
that means
anyway.
an upcoming PC show. Like PC, upcoming show 98 yeah. show, whatever.
We'll be about Stonekeep. Yes,
we will
absolutely.
Pay Peter Oliphant the respect.
That's right. That's right. So that'll be a different one.
By the way, Peter Oliphant made all kinds of great games for the Atari 8-bit.
He also led the development of at Mattel Electronics. They started building PC and Apple games. He led the computer division there. He worked at Sierra. He built the handheld Dungeons and Dragons game. I mean, he made all sorts of amazing stuff. His games need to be revisited, I think.
Right.
They need to be
right.
revisited. So anyway, that was Christmas, which is cool. The other thing I want to talk about is, like, yes, as we evolve what Into the Vertical Blank is, we moved a little bit away from the podcast format that we had for a few years, and then we went to videos, and the videos kind of took over, and we would just take some of the audio from the videos and go back to the podcast. I think next year our attempt will be to take some of the single story episodes that you and I do individually and have a little bit more commentary about it, so it's more like the original podcast was.
Right, exactly.
Even if we do a story or something like that, try to at least get it a little bit more like the original podcast. I think we've heard from a few people that they missed that format. So we're going to try to do that, and what we're also expanding to the other platforms, some of the other platforms that we enjoyed after Atari, which was the PC, maybe a little bit of Sega, maybe a little right. bit of PlayStation. I don't know. We may not get to the Sega and PlayStation. The thing about doing Sega and PlayStation is there's so many other people that know so much more about those platforms that it's not really like our stuff. It really is old
I'm
man
not really
screams at cloud.
Considering too much about other consoles, except for things that were in the USA at the same time as our computers. So to me, I'm really interested in what the Tandy 1000 games were compared to the ST and 8-bit, mm-hmm. what the Apple II ones were, things like that that we didn't get to play. What the Commodore 64
Apple II GS
ones,
and ST versus ST,
ST
that
II GS, the Commodore 64 ones that, you know, they were double versions of, or that we didn't get because they only, you know, there was a gap where games weren't being made for the ST and they stopped making games for the 8-bit. So
that
the
reminds me
of
something,
of
Jeff. You mentioned that. It reminds me of something. I have, I don't know where did it go? I don't know where it is. I must have put it in the garage. I had a game here that I got. Here's the Beyond Zork that you gave me. I put it up here because I'm, it's one of the things I want to get into. I had a game. I got a game off of Whatnot Auction, which was a Tandy 1000 game, and they said the guys on from Retro Games Plus said that they bought it from the estate sale of the programmer who made it.
Oh wow!
And I'm like, oh, that would be a really interesting story. I wish I could find it. I don't know exactly where it is. I'll look for it later. I must have put it outside.
The real interesting thing about the Tandy 1000 is this. That's something I'm really interested in. It was an unheralded by computer game magazines and stuff. Maybe it was, but there weren't really any game magazines here, right? But it was the machine that if Atari had not come out with the ST and the Amiga was too expensive, by the time we got to a 16-bit computer, the Tandy 1000 might have been the machine we got.
Because it's 16-bit, right? Because it's based on the IBM AT or XT.
It's based on the PC Junior, which had an upgraded color and upgraded sound. which is very colors, very right? similar to the ST in its capabilities.
Yeah.
And then they kept on making different versions of it as it went. It's really interesting exploring the Tandy 1000 games that we didn't get on the ST and the ones that we did and compare them.
Yeah, I like that idea.
That we could have, and things would be a lot different if Atari had just dumped, and we wouldn't have got an Amiga because it was too expensive. It was $2,000, so it might have been a Tandy 1000 that we were looking at that point.
You're right. I like that.
And they were down in price about the same price too.
Yeah, it goes along with some of the DOS stuff,
part of the DOS, part of the PC show.
Now I wanted to. I came up with some predictions for 2026.
Okay.
And I wanted to find out. Let me go to those. My first prediction, and I don't know if you have any predictions, but these are my top five predictions. One is not about Atari at all. It's just about the video game industry. I think there's going to be a PS5 portable that Sony announces that's going to be kind of like the Switch and have a dock and dock to the TV. They have to do something like that, especially because of the new Steam box, whatever it's called, the new Steam stuff that Valve is doing. I think they're going to have to do it. So that's one. Second prediction, there will be a new addition to the Atari Plus platform. New addition. They can't just make a new version of the console. I think they have to support a new platform. What do you think?
Yeah, I think my hope is that an Atari Plus comes out that has compatible dongles with multiple systems. It could be. It starts out as Jaguar and Lynx, or Atari 8-bit and 5200, or something like that, right? Like those could be the ones.
One thing would be amazing is a Jag, because the Jaguar was really, really only 100,000 Jaguars are made or something.
No, 250,000.
Or like 250,000. There's just so few out there, right? I really feel like the 7800, it's just like this untapped platform.
It totally is.
And mostly first party games, or hardly very, very few third party games.
Oh, wait. On that note, I'll insert a video of it here. But I saw a guy the guys who were doing Mortal Kombat for the Jaguar, and it is in beta right now, and it looks absolutely amazing.
Awesome. They're probably not just using the STE hardware.
They're not doing that right, exactly.
Because you could easily do that. You could make STE games run on the Jaguar as STE games. So that was it made it easy, and a lot of people just did that. But there was a GPU there that could do some polygons and some, you know, and a blitter and stuff, and that a lot of people didn't use them. Anyway, so it'd be great if there's a Jaguar Plus and then new Jag carts, you know, and support of the Jaguar homebrew community. It'd be great if they did that for the Lynx.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling, it's not a good feeling, but I think they want to try to support the 5200 in some way. And it would be awesome if it was a 5200 adapter for the original 2600 Plus that dumped the games and allowed you to play them. And the reason being is the 5200 is really the lost Atari platform.
Yeah.
And there are there's some really good games for it. It's spurring on that homebrew community would be awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that would be amazing. So I'm hoping that's what happens. That's what I'd like to see first. And then they could move on. Another thing I'd like to see, honestly, is an Atari Plus that includes the Atari Video Music. I still think they need to do something with Video Music. I think also number three, my next one. Atari will license Atari games from Netflix. Because if Netflix buys Warner Brothers, I think one thing Netflix is going to do is put some of those Warner Brothers games on Netflix, so they have their own game channel. But I think they'll be a little bit looser and allow Atari to license some of the games back that are from that in-between time that honestly should should be in an Atari collection and not necessarily in a Warner Brothers or Midway Games collection. So that's what I'm hoping. Especially like Paperboy, which and Gauntlet, and some of those games that were really designed by the same coin-op team that was working at Atari when they split up. So I'd like to see that. Number four, I hope someone announces something for the ST next year.
ST and SDE. Yeah. Atari, they still have dropped the ball on anything ST and STE, Falcon, TT, anything like that. What they need is a working Falcon Mini, but they can't call it that. It needs to be an STE Mini or an ST Mini that can play anything all up to the Falcon, basically.
Right. Right.
And be a real emulation for the Falcon, which still does not 100% exist.
I would love to, that would be amazing to have something. I mean, to see something for the ST. I know that the A1200 is going to come out next June. I plan to get one and hopefully get you one too, and then we can actually do Amiga Adventure. But I may have to wait until 2027. So we'll see. It really depends. Yeah. And so my last prediction that I have is that Digital Eclipse is going to come out after watching their Namco content for the Atari 50. I really think that in the cards is a Namco retrospective from Digital Eclipse that goes over, you know, most of the Namco arcade games that came out. I think there's about 40 that came out before like 1990. That's what I hope.
I just have a prediction that one of these companies that used to be big in processors or memory is going to come back and going to fill the need for DDR5, DDR4 memory for these machines Everybody just wants to sell to all the video card and a video card company too, because everybody is just citing, wow, home people aren't buying things. We're only going to give memory and GPUs to AI companies.
I know. So
someone's going to come. There's going to be new consumer. There's a hole in the consumer market, and we're going to see some of these companies. Is it going to be like Commodore coming back and using the name of their old chip making company who did the 6502? And is, you know what I mean? Like somebody's going to come in and fill that void. And it can't just be Korean memory. It doesn't matter.
It could be Valve. I mean, it could be Valve coming back and doing that. You know, like I think that there will be. I mean, that's a you know, I think a seventh prediction would be a continued return to physical items.
Yes.
You know, my kids this Christmas were telling me they each bought me an LP. One bought me an LP of Sound Effects, and one bought me a Tom Petty record. And it's funny, but they were talking about CDs, and they were telling me that in the New York school system, in New York City, they banned phones from school. So kids are buying CD Walkman and going and checking out CDs from the New York library system, so they can listen to music at school. And there's like this big wave of like, oh yeah, no, people want it. People like CDs. So I think the return to the physical, and this will include like what you said, like memory and people, you know, include like a move away from the cloud when it comes to consumer things and in like hobbyist stuff and to things that are not AI based and kind of not this cynical tech industry that we see now that's really depressing.
Yeah. It's become tech is not big tech. There's no tech there. Right? It's not like tech is coming out of there's Apple. The only tech that's coming out is new version of the same phone over and over again and AI. I'm sure there's other stuff out there, but you know what? And there's, you know, it's just though that you don't, it's just depressing.
Yeah, it is.
That's why companies like Atari and Commodore that come with new machines and doing stuff, and the people out there pushing for the Spectrum Next and doing it on their own, that's who's making a dent in like what people want. you know,
a tiny dent. A tiny dent.
I'm not saying there's bigger. It's making a dent, yeah, though, in what people want. So.
It's the tip of the spear for what I felt would happen a long time ago, which is like, you know, I would go to Maker Faire, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. And Maker Faire was cool, but it was around STEM electronics and getting kids to make things. And I always thought like what they were missing was like literally homebrew, like right, video games and making physical things. And I think that with it, I think, I don't know if Maker Faire doesn't really exist anymore, but if it does, maybe there's some of that there. But I think that is this generation's version of that. I think Maker Faire was more of a baby boomer thing. And I think that homebrew and the type of homebrew that we're talking about is more of a Gen X, elder millennial style thing.
Let's end by talking about the Maker Faire thing just a little bit.
Okay.
It's strange that from 2010 until the pandemic, Maker was huge, and STEM, you heard STEM all the time, get people into this because that's where the jobs are. And then AI came around and it just disappeared.
I know you don't hear much about,
no,
you don't hear about STEM careers, but a lot of kids who graduated from college this year in all, well, it doesn't matter what they graduated in, right, are not finding jobs no matter what. Right. And, right, and a lot of companies are finding alternative ways to alternative workforces and stuff like that, that in a real drive towards like anti-labor, anti-consumer. It's sort of crazy that we live in this, you know, there's a lot of weird stuff going on. Especially when it comes to these anti-consumer things like the memory and the graphics cards and just people deciding not to support consumers anymore. Like, that's just
weird.
Someone has to swoop in and say, okay, well, I'll do it instead.
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that NVIDIA had to come out and say, we're not Enron.
I know. Well, that's your Ed Zitron's podcast is amazing.
I love Ed Zitron's podcast.
It's a whole different thing. Okay, well, so coming next year, you know,
This coming year.
Yeah. We can't promise, we shouldn't ever predict or promise anything because it never happens. But I will say we probably should have a Tron episode.
Yeah, we've been, I had pneumonia when we watched Tron, so I don't remember any of Tron.
Yeah, right, you don't remember any of Tron. No. So one of our great readers, Chris Plus Plus, has requested the Tron episode we talked about, I don't know, probably 5 years ago. The problem with the Tron episode is that there's not a lot of story there. So there's not a lot to say. Like, we went to see the movie and I liked it and you don't remember it. I think it would have to be more about the various Tron games, especially the Tron coin op, which is in my opinion, the Tron coin op is unemulatable.
If you get one of the Tron controllers,
yeah,
for your arcade machine,
does it support
then
it?
You can play it. Yeah. So there's a guy, is it GRS or whatever? Anyway, they make one that's the Tron controller, and it you wire it in, and it has the button, and everything works perfectly.
Does it have the spinner too?
Yes, because it has a spinner on. You already just use your spinner on your
right,
on your
but if you're already a normal human who is loading up the Tron ROM and trying to emulate it with your keyboard and your gamepad, it's freaking not going to work. Like, you can't play Tron.
You might be able to do it with two analog sticks. I don't know.
I don't think so. You need to have a spinner. That arm has to spin just just like in Food Fight, right? Like.
Well, I have Tron on my arcade machine, but the problem is there's too many controls.
Right, you need to have a trigger button.
I have
as
a
well.
Spinner, but I don't have a trigger, so I need
you
another.
You need a trigger. You need a trigger and a spinner, and it's almost like why the Star Wars arcade game is almost impossible, because you need to have, you know, the proper controls as well. But anyway, Tron to me is that, but anyway, I'd love to have a bigger conversation about Tron and talk about it in the history and stuff like that, because it was really important at the time. It was actually one more thing about Tron is, like, what Tron is one of the things, kind of like The Last Starfighter and a few other movies, where it was the video game culture that should have started. It should have been the thing that started video game culture, but it actually ended it. Because it all blew up, and then Nintendo kind of picked up the mantle, did everything a few years later. But it should have been the beginning of it, and for some reason, it all just died. And maybe, I think now, maybe it was all just a fad. It was a fad among a certain age group that grew out of it, and it took another age group to actually take it on.
But computers, yeah. But computers didn't die. But no, the Atari 8-bits did. Right.
Atari 8-bit. I mean,
they didn't die, but there were. It's just software dried up because all those guys, as David Crane, I'm going to quote him a little bit. All those developers got together. It was a 1983 or 1984 CES, and they said, "We need a platform. The 2600 is going away. Let's all go for the Commodore 64," and they did.
Yeah,
and so that's how the Commodore 64, not just how it became, because it sold a bunch, but that's what became the software platform.
Right, because they needed a new platform.
They needed a platform, and the 2600 was dead, and, you know, Atari was abandoning the Atari 8-bits, so, you know.
Well, okay, this was really fun. It was fun to finally have a conversation. I hope that that these videos work out and they get recorded and all that. And we can somehow edit this. It doesn't have to come out this weekend. I don't know when it has to come out.
Atari Now! Yeah, whenever.
Atari Now. Hey, okay, so ready? Where are we? Where
are we in the vertical blank, Steve.
Yeah, we're in the vertical
blank. And we're going to leave the vertical blank with Tony Longworth's Out of the Vertical Blank.
Out of the Vertical Blank.
We were children of the Silicon Revolution, an X generation conscripted to fight the console and home computer wars. A product of an analog 70s childhood, we came of digital age in the 80s, believing we could affect the world 8 bits at a time. Armed with joysticks, full stroke keyboards, Jolt Cola, and MTV haircuts, we proceeded into the vertical blank. There, we stayed up late at night, devising incantations from D&D rulebooks and beginner's all-purpose symbolic instruction code. Video games were the match, and programming was the fuse, as the infinite possibilities of the digital world exploded into the internet age to come. We are Generation Atari.
Into the vertical blank.